Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Comedian Paula Poundstone is always busy. In addition to her semi-regular gig as a panelist on the NPR news quiz Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Poundstone is also a working stand-up comic who tours pretty incessantly.
That tour schedule will include at least two stops in Wisconsin in the coming days. She'll perform stand-up at the Pabst Theater this Saturday night and returns for a stand-up performance in Sheboygan in May. Wait, Wait also records in Milwaukee in April. We do not yet know who is on that panel.
Well, ahead of this weekend's performance, we reached the outspoken comedian at home, Paula Poundstone. It is great to talk with you.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to having you here in Milwaukee again. These shows are always fantastic when you're here. This season, I want to start with politics because it seems like, in a way, this political season would be too easy for comedians. It's almost like everybody's handing you stuff on a plate.
Well, it kind of is, although I got to say, and I'm assuming that many of my brethren anyways would feel the same, which is, you know, we're happy to make stuff up. we don't need disaster to befall our country and in turn the world in order to make jokes. We'll find clever comedy in other topics need be. I think that most responsible comedians would say that what they really would like is a good president and not necessarily a fountain of jokes. You know, Donald Trump has given beyond his share in terms of comedy. But, you know, I got to say, the other day, I've been doing Twitter for, I don't know, several years, you know, and I write jokes and tragically, I also have to say, like, oh, I'm going to be at the blah, blah, blah. I hate self-promotion. But mostly I try to write jokes. You know, I think of things that I think are funny, and I put them up on Twitter. And I've been doing that for several years. And in all of that time, I've probably written about five serious things. And the other day it dawned on me, you know what? This has gone too far. Because in the beginning, I did think he was funny. I confess, I used to say he was the Danny Kaye of politics, you know, kind of the, you know, red-haired, funny guy. But I'm like, yeah, it's not funny anymore. It was funny when he was alone. It became less funny when he had so many people following him, you know, so many people coming to his rallies and supporting him and cheering when he says heinous things. And so the other day, I did tweet that I owed everyone an apology because in the beginning I thought it was funny and now I don't. And, you know, I do watch stuff sometimes trolling for jokes. It's true. Like I watch the debates sometimes specifically, you know, in part because, it's part of being a good citizen to pay attention to what's going on, but also because I know that there will be funny stuff. I end up in hotels a lot, though, and it's hard to watch a debate in a hotel because security keeps coming up. Every time I yell, yes, but that wasn't the question, which you do for both parties, by the way. But I will say the other day, Marco Rubio said, I forget where, but it was at some Republican debate, and he said, if when I am president, we will catch the terrorists and we will put them in Guantanamo Bay and they will answer our questions. And that was in response to, would you like a glass of water? They are frustrating, you know?
Well, and the other thing that I think is really interesting is that comedy seems to be where a lot of us get our actual news from. I mean, I'm thinking from, you know, The Daily Show, John Oliver, Samantha Bee, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Certainly it's funny, but there's real news in there. And I don't remember this being the case 30 years ago. And
by the way, I'm not sure it's the healthiest thing for the democracy. I'm really not.
That was my question. I mean, is this really a dangerous thing for comedians to actually being the ones always speaking truth to power?
Well, I mean, I think it's important that we do. And, you know, when I talk on stage, I always say to people right up front, I say, look, full disclosure, I'm a Democrat. I'm an Obama supporter. I feel the burn. You needn't. We don't have to be the same. You know, I'm not campaigning. And I'm not always right. And I'm open to the possibility that I am wrong. I'm not a political analyst. I'm not a historian. I'm hanging on by a thread to understand a lot of what's going on. But if I sound like I'm coming from a particular perspective, it's because I am. It's because I think in a particular way. And so, you know, here's why. But, you know, I think it's a good idea to say, well, here's what it looks like to me. Here's, you know, how it feels to me, because Otherwise, we won't understand one another ever. And you know, the truth is, this is going to sound really silly. Our wellness, our success as individuals depends on the success and wellness of others who we don't look like. And that's just a fact. And so, you know, we do need to understand one another. I'm confused sometimes, though, by what the analysts call the angry vote. You know, my mother, by the way, was the angriest person I've ever known in my life. The idea that she would vote out of anger terrifies me. I one time knocked a Flintstones glass off the kitchen table, and my mother said, "Well, damn it, we can't have nice things." I hate to think of that in the voting booth. I don't know. I'm losing tolerance with the angry vote, I guess. I'm feeling like, well, okay. You know, and the idea that all these new people have been brought into the voting process, well, that's terrific. But, you know, where were you before? You know, we're not going to have the utopia that we would all hope for if we don't all participate in a thoughtful manner and not the angry vote. You know, what about the vote where you go, you know, you can't vote for what you don't want. It's a good idea to vote for what you do want and to let your leaders know what you do want. You got to wonder how much do politicians respond? I mean, I know, for example, I don't know how the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee got my email. I assume they got it from the NSA like everyone else. But, oh, my God, every day I get like... You know, 10 emails every day from them saying, and each one is masked differently. It'll, you know, today's will be from Obama, tomorrow's will be from Malia. You know, they're all writing to me personally. Isn't that an odd coincidence? You got to wonder, like, okay, how much? I pay no attention to their emails. Well, why would they pay any attention to mine? I think maybe good old fashioned letter writing is probably a good idea. You know, here's what we care about, and here's what we're interested in. And I wish people would give up on the idea that the president creates jobs. He doesn't even have a vote in the Congress for heaven's sake. He's really kind of, you know, as we've seen in this Congress, I mean, it's very possible to kind of, what do you call it, boxed out. That's what they call in basketball. You know, it's very possible to sort of box out what the president wants. And then we keep doing this cruel thing to both parties, which is we'll go, yeah, okay, yeah, we want a Democratic president. Put him in there. And then we put in a majority Republican Congress. And so the two are just, you know, have you seen the pictures of Obama from when he first took office and now? I mean, it's true that 8 years have passed, but honestly, it looks like those meth photos that they show on online.
The poor man has gone very gray.
Yeah, he's, and good for him for not dyeing his hair. I always thought it was funny that Reagan insisted he didn't dye his hair. Do you remember that? Reagan had, you know, he was 80 or 90 and he had bright red hair. And he was still claiming he didn't dye it. And I thought, well, geez, if you can't be honest about that. I dye my hair, but A, I tell people, so the secret's given away. And B, I don't get around to doing it for long periods of time. And so sometimes, you know, it comes in at my part and my head looks like a rural highway for long periods of time. So I'm not fooling anyone.
Well, maybe if you dyed it more often.
Yeah, I think that's the key. I think you nailed it right there. Exactly.
Just dye it more often.
Yeah, it takes forever. It's a pain in the neck. I wish I had never done it to begin with. I did it because HBO wanted me to, and that was just to get the service. It was a mistake.
It was.
Oh, my gosh, it's a pain.
And you're paying for it now.
Am I ever? It's more, you know, I don't go to the stupid salon anymore. Because the last time I went, some woman turned my hair orange. You know how the hair people, they'll go, they'll, you know, sort of stand in front of the mirror, mostly staring at themselves, and they sort of are feathering your hair while they talk to you. And they're like, okay, what would you like? And I just brown. And she goes, do you want some highlights? And meanwhile, she's got, like, you know, hair with, you know, shocks of orange in it. And I said, she goes, do you want to warm it up a bit like mine? I'm like, nope, brown. Oh, here's a magazine. Pick what you want. I find a magazine. Point to brown. Just brown. And so, you know, it's not, they're not coloring it with crayons. It's not like the stuff they put on your head looks the color that it's going to be. So I had no way of knowing what she was doing. So she puts, you know, the gross junk in my hair, and I sit around for, you know, in fact, I fell asleep with gross stuff on my head, looking like an idiot. And then later, when I wake up and she's, you know, blowing it out, well, by golly, she put orange junk in it. And at first I thought, well, I'm just being paranoid, you know. Maybe it's not as orange as I think it is. I go to pick my son up at school. He was in, like, the second grade at the time. I arrive at school, and the little kids start coming out, and they're all staring at my head. And a little girl walks by and goes, your head's orange. Okay.
Yes,
Mama, see, Mom, your head's orange.
The honesty of children.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. You know what they used to say to me, too? My son is a piece of work. I remember one time I was walking to pick him up or something. I was going through the playground. This little girl runs up to me, and she goes, Thomas, he interrupts the teacher, and he makes fart noises with his arm. I said, try living with him. I got no sympathy for you, kid.
I was going to say, you weren't being very sympathetic there.
No. I'm like, you're getting off easy. I got him hours a day.
When he's not here. I send him here so that I can rest.
Exactly. Yes. To get away from the fart noises with his arm. I don't know. Apparently that's not fetching to a young girl.
I don't remember that being terribly exciting.
Thomas thought it was part of courtship.
Well, maybe in second grade, yeah.
Listen, I'm fairly certain a lot of guys think it's courtship in their 30s.
But, yeah. Oh my goodness, well, I'm looking at the time, and I know I have to let you go.
I think it's a good idea.
I think so.
I volunteer at a nursing home, and I can't keep them waiting.
No.
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 I'll tell you, by the way, we got to do end-of-life issues different. America's a little weak in this area. It's, you know.
I agree.
It's just not, you know, every time I'm there, and I love these people, they're nice and fun and people, the people that work at the nursing home, I think are well intended, but it's just not what anybody wants, and so we shouldn't do it. We should do something else. Maybe the black capsule. I don't know, but it shouldn't be this, you know. And Everybody who works there, I'm sure, are thinking in their heads all the time, never, you know. It's just, I don't know.
Don't send me here. When it's my time, don't send me here.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they know, you know. But, I go there and I bring them CDs and we play music and sing music. And, I tell them stories. And, I don't know, one lady always thinks I'm Dorothy, and that's good enough.
And that's okay.
Yeah. Eventually, I just agreed to be Dorothy. But
With the bad dye job.
Yes. Even some of the people with dementia stare at my head when I'm orange. Well, you know what's funny is one of the services that they provide at this nursing home is they do have a beauty shop, and it's what women in particular, obviously not so much men, but it's what women have come to know. It's part of their routine, and as they get older, they like to still have that routine. Uh-oh, jeez. I gotta go.
Okay.
It's all backing up on me now.
Yep.
Hey, thanks so much. It was fun talking with you.
Hey, Paula, thank you so much, and we are so looking forward to having you here in Milwaukee.
All right, me too. You take care.
All right, bye.
Comedian, commentator, and occasional NPR quiz show panelist Paula Poundstone performs Saturday evening at the Pabst Theater in Milwaukee.